I might as well get started, seeing as we've got a conversation going already. So, so the idea of this is, socialist, well, not socialist films, but you know, favourite films, desert island films. Well, we did this about books a while back, and that seemed quite popular. And we ended up with a list that's actually on the website with you know, books that socialists kind of, or novels that socialists like. So it seems like a good idea to see if, you know, people feel the same way about films. When we looked at novels, we couldn't really think of many that were what we would call socialist. We've discovered three. I think we'd be hugely challenged to find even one film that we could call, you know, even remotely socialist. I can't think of any anyway. I mean, you can think of lots of films that are, you know, sort of make one aspect of, you know, of the case against capitalism. Fight Club was an interesting example of a sort of anti-corporate film, buried in a really rather ridiculous plot. Then you've got things like anti-finance, like in Trading Places, anti-industry in Modern Times. Or you've got films that sort of typify the dignity of humanity in the face of poverty. So any number of films, Grapes of Wrath comes to mind. Or The Courage of the Common Citizen and Their Convictions. I'm thinking 12 Angry Men, To Kill a Mockingbird, things like that. I did a sort of Google search for movies, socialist films, films about socialism, films mentioning socialism, nothing, not really anything. Just sort of lists of tedious Soviet documentaries and sort of vaguely left-leaning films that we just wouldn't regard as socialist. So maybe thin pickings, really. Lots of films do, you know, like I say, have certain details. Sometimes they make points quite obliquely, and I suspect sometimes unintentionally, that sort of make socialist arguments. What I find a bit tiresome are those kind of overtly political, you know, those didactic films that are sort of very worthy, but often very hard work to watch. I find Ken Loach films really hard work, personally. And also all those kind of films that start off with the premise of, you know, the downtrodden worker in the office environment who just embarks on a little rebellion. There are several films like that, like Falling Down, but they don't really inspire rebellion, because they seem to set out to do the exact opposite. Like, if you rebel, you know, this is what's going to happen to you, bad things. It occurred to me while I was thinking about office workers, I remembered The Matrix, which, of course, the guy in that, Neo, he's an office worker. The Matrix is really quite an outstanding film, I think. It functions at the level of, well, it's pure sci-fi shoot 'em up, you know, adrenaline-fueled adventure at one level, but it's also a really elegant allegory of capitalism at another level. And I think this is why it resonated so hugely with people. You know, really, I think it would be, if anybody hasn't seen it, I urge you to see it. In fact, I'm jealous if you haven't seen it yet. Just don't bother with the sequels; they're a bit rubbish. But whether it was the film's intention to portray an allegory of capitalism, it's a bit of a moot question, really, because and what the film intends and what we take from it can be two different things, obviously. There are films that make quite deliberately feel good points about working class solidarity. A lot of you will have seen the film Pride. Another one in this vein is Made in Dagenham. Another one is Brassed Off. I'm sure that you can think of other examples. One standout film, not entirely in a good way, it's a bit of a niche film, and it's a bit sort of, it's just an odd film. It's John Carpenter's They Live. This is a film in which there's a character called Nada, i.e. nothing, get it, And he acquires a pair of magical sunglasses which allow him to see the world as it really is. And when he puts these sunglasses on, all the advertising hoardings and the street signs change to say things like buy, watch, TV, consume, sleep, obey. So, you know, the message is the population's being secretly brainwashed by its own advertising. So not a million miles away from reality. One of my favourite accidental covert socialist points, and I say accidental because I'm sure that the filmmakers didn't intend this, was in the Arnold Schwarzenegger film Total Recall. Now, the story here is that the bad guy monopolises all the breathable air on Mars and charges money for it. And when the people rebel, he turns the air off to suffocate them all. Of course, our socialist Schwarzenegger comes to the rescue, beats the bad guy, and turns the air back on and makes it common property for everyone. Now, I'm sure that Schwarzenegger, being a one-time Republican governor, had no intention of making a socialist film, but that was the film I saw. That was the message I took from it, and it's always kind of interested me how often this sort of thing happens in film. They can put abstract ideas about equality and just justice or honesty and so forth, how money creates evil, how ambition can be destructive. I'm thinking of money makes you greedy. I think the treasure of the Sierra Madre or something like that. Leadership can turn into tyranny. All these sorts of, you know, vague kind of ideas of ideals, if you like, are latent in the thinking of most people, including filmmakers. And these, of course, these are also socialist ideas to some extent that people, and people just don't realise it. So when they put it in films, it's, you know, there's a message there for us. What's interesting about films, I think, is there's very little fun to be had in a film which upholds the existing system and its ideology. That's just boring. And the fun is in questioning the existing system and its ideology. And in so doing, that's how they're making the sort of socialist points. And I think this is sort of suggests one of the interesting, well, not one of the major, but one of the interesting contradictions about capitalism. And this is the film industry completely exists to make money. It's part of the capitalist system. And yet the only way it does that, really, is by just constantly sticking pins in capitalist ideology for the sake of entertainment. Sometimes it makes some really good points when it's based on sort of true stories. It makes some really interesting points. I don't know if you ever saw Gorillas in the Mist about Diane Fossey, the primatologist, who got murdered trying to protect gorillas from illegal poachers. The message there was quite plain. The world revolves around money, not gorillas. And if push comes to shove, it's not money that's going to suffer. Similar films cover pollution. Erin Brockovich, and there was quite a good 2019 film called Dark Waters about a decades-long class action suit against the DuPont Corporation that had just basically poisoned people for decades. But the problem with these things is they're not necessarily making a socialist point, they're making a reformist point. So even as they're raising awareness, they're not raising socialist awareness. And I wouldn't want to overstate the case about socialist values in films. If films are always about some aspect of life and all life has a political dimension, well, you could just, in that case, you could just read anything into anything. But I think films provide a kind of drip effect on popular consciousness that can change with the times. I mean, if you think sort of in the early 20th century, when the party started, you know, there was no film, not really. I mean, hardly anything. There was nothing, I think, then. And that was at a time when people would doff their caps to politicians because politicians had this kind of mystique of remoteness. Because people only ever saw them at a distance, if at all, or in newspapers, or a bit later on in newsreels. So they treated politicians like royalty, or, you know, kind of remote gods. And what film did, and what it continues to do, is it brings the world closer to the viewer. It makes the world more intimate, and the viewer loses their sense of awe. And satire also breaks these barriers down. Each generation of satirists, I think, tries to push the satire a bit further and outdo what previous satirists have done. I can't think who the current satirists are. You might know. I think the South Park satirists, the people who made the South Park movies, their satire is absolutely blistering, and it's really funny as well. I do recommend Team America World Police if you haven't ever seen that. So anyway, I think you can tell that I like films. So I don't see them just as escapist nonsense. Well, not entirely anyway, because they have to relate to reality at some level so that we can relate to them. And in so doing, they also, you know, reflect that reality back at us. Sometimes in a new light, it can make us see things in a slightly new way. And we can learn from that. As long as we don't trust film uncritically, which some people unfortunately do, especially when they claim to be true stories or historically accurate. Films are all about entertainment, after all, you know, so the truth can be somewhat optional. Okay, anyway, so that's a few ideas. If we were to compose a list of favourite films, they wouldn't necessarily be socialist films, just films that, I don't know, give a kind of view on politics that is sort of, you know, uniquely a socialist view. I don't think that's impossible to find. So, okay, there we are. So let's see if you can come up with any ideas.
Shall I start? Get in first.
Oh, please do. If lots of people want to talk, you can always use the speaking queue. Yeah, go on, mate.
Cheers. Yeah. When I was having a think about films and what ones to mention, I definitely had to bring in one by Peter Watkins, who's one of my favourite directors. He's most well known for the War Game, the BBC anti-nuclear film, and after that he went much more marginalised and independent, and along with that comes a certain sort of paranoia. He was very fixated on what he believed with his sort of deliberate marginalisation by the mainstream media. And that led him to sort of become a bit of a film theorist as well, into how the structure and the form of a film influences its message. So one of the techniques he used on that was improvisation, you know, also used by the likes of Ked Loach and Mike Leigh to, you know, get something a bit more naturalistic in his films. And he sort of switched over to improvisation in the 70s. As more of a technique, although he'd always used it. But the film of his that I'll mention, which should hopefully give a bit more of his political ideas, is one called Privilege from 1967. And that was a film without improvisation. It was for a major film company. So in that respect, it's a bit more glossy than some of his other films, which are a bit more raw and sort of rough and ready, you know, deliberately so. But what Privilege is about, and it stars Paul Jones out of Manfred Mann. He's a pop star in the near future, possibly sometime in the 70s, you know, sort of, I don't know, 5 or so years in the future at the time it was made. And as a pop star, he's very much manufactured by the government. So his sort of tone as a performer, you know, the content of the messages behind his songs, they're very much manipulated in order to give the message that the government wants. What Watkins is saying this, you know, he's very anti-authoritarian and very much against the sort of messages that the government's come out with. So that's sort of his political angle in the film. It's not a perfect film at all. Some bits of it seem a bit under rehearsed. Some bits of it are a bit clunky, but alongside that, it's a visual, you know, sort of treat to watch with the sort of the near future fashions and some of the spectacles in it. So it sort of delivers visually, and lots of ideas in it about media manipulation, you know, the messages sent out to the masses. So it's very sort of thoughtful as well. It's not my favorite film of Peter Watkins's. That one's Punishment Park, which is about authoritarian states and how they react to, you know, civil rights movements, sort of late 60s radical movements. And that's a much better film. But yeah, I'll go with Privilege, as it's a bit more sort of a bit more relatable, I suppose, in terms of how the messages sent out by the media. But yeah, anything by Peter Watkins is worth a watch. Some of his later films go on for about 15 hours. but he's, always bursting full of sort of anti-authoritarian ideas. He's got, you know, quite an impressive sort of faith in people to make social change. So yeah, really interesting bloke as well as a filmmaker worth watching. Yeah, cheers, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah, well, he did. Was it him that did Paris Commune?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Actually, yeah. What you were saying about using improv, there seems to be. I don't know if there seems to be a sort of tendency towards making films with like non-professional actors. That's for that naturalistic thing that you were talking about. I think there's just won an Oscar, a Nomadland, that does that. It's got one professional actor and the rest are actually nomads. They're actually sort of travellers in America. So that might be quite good.
Quite a few Italian films are good at sort of picking up on particular aspects of the system and highlighting them, pointing them up. I mean, an obvious one, which quite a few of the people here will probably have seen, is Bicycle Thieves, about basically poverty in immediate post-war Italy and the effect of that on individual lives. I think the director of that was De Sica, Vittorio De Sica. And there's another one which people are unlikely to know, which is called, in English, it's called The Organizer, about this individual, I suppose some kind of Trotskyist, who goes around factories where workers are super exploited, encouraging them to stick up for their rights. It was made by a director who's quite well known, but can't quite remember offhand. 1900, which people mentioned at the beginning, I found that interminable, I have to say. Some aspects of it were good, it's true. But it was originally made in Italian, actually, although there were lots of English-speaking actors in it. It made some point, certainly. I mean, it was partly about fascism, but, of course, the idea was that it would... I think it was in two parts, wasn't it? Two three-hour parts. And the idea was that it would go through as much of the... It was called 1900. The Italian title was The 20th Century, Il Novecento. The idea was that it would go through as much of the 20th century as possible, sort of commenting on, if you like, or picturing certain aspects of things that happen in the 20th century and trying to sort of make them typical of, you know, common experience of people during that period. Moving away from Italy, another film that comes to mind, I don't know if people know it, is Matawan. It's about industrial struggle in the States in, is it the 20s or 30s? It's a brilliant film, by the way, in which sort of unusually, but absolutely believably, the workers win out over their exploiters. Don't know if anybody's seen that, but if not, well worth seeing. Again, it's one particular aspect of life under capitalism, but a pretty inspiring film, actually. Matewan. I think that's the way it's spelt anyway. Matawan. I think it's the name of a place.
Well, thanks. Howard. I was thinking. I was thinking actually, we could. What would be good is if people have got ideas of films, to put them in the speaking queue. So maybe a link to IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or something like that for the rest of us. So Darren's got a queue in the queue. Darren,
I'm just putting mom's computer.
Just give me a second. My son's been obnoxious to me.
Who are you talking to?
Somebody far, far away. Okay, bye.
Scotland?
No, Scotland.
Where is he from?
Addy, I think he's from London. Okay, bye. Sorry about that. Just to follow up, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about the domestic bliss. To follow up on Howard's point about 1900, it just struck me... I think probably Howard knows more about this than me, I do, but am I right in thinking it was interesting about 1900 is because when it was made and why it was made in the mid-70s and the Italian Communist Party at that time was the largest, alongside the French Communist Party, was the largest communist parties outside, the state capitalist dictatorships. And there was a genuine hope and fear on both sides that the Italian Communist Party would become the largest party in Italian politics. And I believe it was like the historic compromise of 1976, et cetera. So I think sometimes it's interesting to sort of pick out why films are made, when they're made. Obviously Bertolucci as a politically active filmmaker genuinely thought he wasn't just making an entertainment here or a historical drama. He was making something he thought was like part and parcel, if you like, of the propaganda drive. I don't know if he was ever an actual CP member, but he was definitely a CP Communist Party supporter. With regards to, follow up Howard's recommendation of Matawan, John Sayles' film, really good film. It's actually based on true, it's loosely based on true events, the Battle of Blair Mountain, and the actual, it's almost like a Western in some regards. There's a big shootout at the end, and the kind of daft thing is the shootout actually happened. It was actually real. And if you kind of read up on like Sid Hatfield, who was like the guy, one of the good guys in Matawan, it's a really, really good film, really recommended. Might have other things to say. I did initially put in a link to a short clip from a 1930s film, from the clips. It's not a short film, the clip's short. It's from a comedy called The Merry Thrinks. I think it was made in 1934. And I like old films. And I remember watching this film because it was me that uploaded it to YouTube. And suddenly in the midst of this comedy, this kind of like farcical comedy, one of the characters who's like this stereotypical radical in this family, dysfunctional family, suddenly talks about abolishing money. And I just was so kind of taken by it that I was able to rip it from the film and upload it. So, if anybody wants to check that, whoever wrote that script back in 1934, and it was around about the time of the Hays Codes, funny enough, so it was, pre-code, post-code Hollywood, they generally knew what socialism was, just a wee clip. I think it's like 40 seconds long. Thank you.
Talking about satire, I would recommend Parasite, which is a recent release. I saw it just before the first lockdown in the cinema, and I think it won some Oscar Best Picture that year. A Korean film, and it's about a family. It's about a working class family. Well, they're all unemployed, actually, who live in the most appalling conditions. Basically, they live underground in a basement flat, and it's about how they worm their way into getting employed by a member of the capitalist class. And it's actually quite funny, and it's just ever so well done. You wouldn't call it a political film, but it is political because it's about, I don't know, it's about how there are two classes in society. I mean, it doesn't end well for anyone, but that's because we live in a shit system. Has anyone else seen it?
I've seen it, yeah. Yeah, you know, I quite liked it. I think it turns into a sort of Hitchcockian horror, doesn't it, in the second half, which is it's one of those films that you start off thinking it's one thing and then it turns into something different.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because the family, they're not... I mean, they're cheats and they're liars, aren't they? But you can't help but feel sympathy for them. You can't help but feel like... you can't help but relate to them and their situation. And, you know, they're not goodies in the classic sense or victims in the classic sense. You know, I just thought it was really interesting. And I thought it was even more interesting that the film won that award for being Best Picture.
Yeah, I think that's the first time a foreign language film has got Best Picture Oscar, I think. I think there were some complaints in South Korea about it, saying people aren't as poor as all that here. But then there was some articles going around showing pictures of actual places that really were that bad.
Yeah.
Dougie, something to...
The Paddy Hates, which I think is a brilliant film, called Christ Stopped at Eboli. By Francesco Rossi or whatever. If you look at all the film things, it's in the top, one of the top 100 films you must see or whatever. And it's quite good. It's about peasants in Italy under Mussolini and a doctor's sent to Eboli, which that's the name of the film, Christ Stopped at Eboli. And he's a doctor and he starts practicing and he helps the peasants. And the political content of the film is that the peasants have nothing in common with the ruling elite or whatever. They're always been bandits and all the rest of it and living off the land. And it basically says the left are state worshippers and the right are state worshippers, and there's no difference between them, really. And it's quite an interesting film. It's beautifully filmed, and a lot of the peasants there, you know, have travelled to New York or America, right, to try and get a bit more of a life or whatever. And some of them came back and things. But it's a nice film. I rate it, right. Paddy thought it was dreadful because it was too long and nothing happened. But I thought the political content was very good, right.
I agree with you, Dougie. It is a brilliant film. Francesco Rosi was the director, but it's a film largely about it's an anti-fascist film, a film about the oppression of fascism upon peasants, but also the oppression peasants, Italian peasants anyway, suffered generally, whoever was in power. So in that sense, you could say, broadly speaking, it's a socialist film, but it hasn't got a sort of, certainly hasn't got our political dimension. And it's a film based on a novel, actually, by Carlo Levi called Christ Stopped at Eboli, of which there were a significant number written in Italy. Well, in the 30s and 40s, they had to be published abroad, but, a lot were written afterwards as well in order to sort of try and make sense of what had happened in Italy in the 20 years that Mussolini had been in power.
Hi, can I just add to that, Howard? Howard?
Please do, go ahead.
Hiya. I was just going to say, Howard said it's about the oppression of the peasants, Cristo si fermato a Eboli, but it's also about the oppression of the intellectual class who are against fascism, because the main character, the doctor, is sent in exile, let's say, to the south, because he's been writing stuff against fascism. So it's not just about the oppression of the peasants. And just while I'm on, a Japanese film called Shoplifters. I don't know if anybody's seen that. It came out a couple of years ago. It really exposes the myth that Japan is this rich, civilized country. It shows incredible poverty of some of the people living in Tokyo and how basically they only get by shoplifting. Thanks.
When Howard was Howard and Dougie were talking about that Rosie film, I was thinking I just found it too long and nothing happened. But You know, that's because I'm a Philistine. But I do remember one Italian film from 1945 that Howard probably knows as well, called Rome Open City. It was a Rossellini film, I think, with Anna Magnani. Absolutely edge of the seat. Absolutely edge of the seat. Made just after the end of the war with mostly amateur actors. And Anna Magnani was actually a comedy actor. But as a sort of portrayal of life under sort of the Nazis, just quite unforgettable. I saw it 40 years ago and I still remember it.
Yeah, unique film, I agree. Yeah.
As you say, not a lot to do with socialism, of course. But I think we'd be clutching at straws, really, to find any film that makes any overtly socialist statement. Has anybody ever seen a film that they thought, you know, made a kind of strongly socialist statement?
You mean in terms of advocating the kind of society that we're looking for?
Yeah, well, some aspect of it, at least. It's like Darren mentioned, you know, that snippet from the 30s where the guy goes on about abolishing money. Anything like that, you know.
I've never seen it, but apparently there was a film adaptation of News from Nowhere. I think it was made in the 70s. So I guess there's that. So apparently Sergei Eisenstein was always committed to doing a film adaptation of Das Kapital. That would have been intriguing. That would have been interesting.
Riveting.
Riveting, aye, obviously. You know, once he gets past the first footnote, you know, I'm sure it would have been brilliant. But I think there's maybe films, maybe that's not they're not seeing it from the same angle as we do necessarily, but I'm sure there's films which have dealt with the issue of leadership, if you like, you know, this idea of people placing their trust in leaders and how, you know, it fails either because the leaders themselves are false or, you know, their intentions, however well-intentioned, don't pan out. You know, there's an old film based on a novel called Fame as a Spur by Howard Spring. It's from the 40s with Michael Redgrave, and it's based on a novel. And it's basically about Ramsay MacDonald, to be honest. You know, it's basically, but it's just like the first version of that kind of political figure. This idea of someone who had the best intentions when they started it, and at some point they thought they were the personification of like the working class, sort of achieving emancipation. And at some point they lost sight of that, and they thought it was really about them. As long as they were in power, then somehow that in itself was enough, you know. But there's been lots of, you know, that there's a Robert Redford film from the early 70s called The Candidate, which was all about like a liberal politician who during the course of the film eventually sort of compromises all his beliefs, you know, to the point where he basically loses sight of why he initially became a politician. There's Bill Worth from the 90s, I think, 80s or 90s, Warren Beatty. Same kind of idea, you know, this idea of like losing your original idealism. I think that's kind of making a point, which kind of overlaps with what we say sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. I think these things kind of do overlap a little bit, yeah. But in search of that elusive sort of overtly socialist point, I don't, can we get anywhere? Dougie, you put another cue in. Does that mean you wanted to talk again, or shall I go to Freddie?
I'm only going to mention Land and Freedom, that film. I think it was based on George Orwell's book, The Homage to Catalonia. It was quite interesting about Spain or whatever. And I think it was true to the book, right? You know, although he dies in obscurity, and the guy who was in the Republic or whatever. So I mean, it's quite an interesting film.
Yeah, Ken Loach, of course. One of the, I think the only Ken Loach film that I've actually managed to sit through. Freddie.
Yeah, thanks, Paddy. Evening, comrades and friends that are there. The film that's always struck a chord with me, perhaps not as intellectual as it is what others have mentioned earlier, was a film with Jack Nicholson and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I always found that there was just something about that film that say strikes a chord with me about how society, about mental institutions, etc., people getting sent there, and then the character that Jack Nicholson plays, whose name escapes me, it's a long time since I've seen it, and it doesn't seem to be on the television much these days either, was the way that MD that is sort of anti-authoritarian, the manner in which they seek to control them with drugs, etc. And the rebelliousness of some of the other characters in it. And apparently it was actually filmed in an institution. Which might give it some credence, and I can't remember the writer's name and such like. So, but it was interesting that the way some of the characters, albeit that they're there, were identifying and could see the way in which Jack Nicholson's character was being treated, and become supportive of him, etc. So, as I say, it was for me, it was a film that. You know, MD that sort of stands against authority, the way they can try to be brought down. I mean, it's pretty dark in places, the film, but overall, that for me is a film that strikes a chord with me. And just on one point, there's somebody mentioned about, I think it was you, Paddy, just said a few minutes back. Any particular films that portrays the socialist case. I'm not sure about this, and I haven't seen the film, right? But was there not something brought out maybe a couple of three, four, 5 years ago? I think it was called The Young Karl Marx. And then apparently it's a film about his friendship with Engels, etc. So I don't know if anyone's seen that, or if we even get the right name of the film. But I know there was a film of that sort out a few years ago. That's it.
Thanks, Freddie. I think it's Young Marx that you're talking about, and I saw it as a stage play. I can't remember it making very many Marxist points, though. The one I saw just kind of wanted to poke fun at Marx for being a sort of shiftless layabout and letting everyone else do earn his keep. So yeah, he wouldn't have learned very much from it. It's quite funny in places, though. Darren, again?
Yeah, just on Land and Freedom. It's not based on Homage to Catalonia, though obviously there's overlaps. I'm like you about Loach. I'm the same about Mike Lee, actually, two filmmakers I kind of used to love and eventually just got exasperated by. But Land and Freedom, I think, is an interesting film because of the screenwriter. There's a guy called Jim Allen who was like, he's actually a hardline Trotskyist. He started out in Coronation Street, but he's a really good writer. Made Rain and Stones with Ken Loach as well, and a few Play for Today's. But the interesting thing about that film, and if you kind of touches upon what you say, well, you know, where is this socialist content? There's a bit in the middle of the film, I think it's like 12 or 13 minutes long, where they have a debate over, they've taken over a village from the fascists, and they've like the peasants and the poom members are discussing what to do with the land to immediately like collectivize it. Or just to like, it's basically a debate between like Popular Frontism versus like Trotsky's and anarchists. And there's like this 11 minute debate to and fro. And Loach, like Mike was saying, but Watkins uses unprofessional actors. So he was actually using people who were actually like peasants and were having this discussion. And it was actually a really interesting and engaged discussion, funny enough, even though it was 11 minutes long. But also, like, if you like, for me, suggests why there isn't. If you like a socialist film, because possibly that's what it would involve. It would involve people at times sitting around having like a 20-minute army with each other, having a row with each other, you know. And I found it fascinating, and I'd recommend watching it. But you kind of wonder if that's what people want, you know? This idea that somebody like almost having like a Socratic dialogue with someone about socialism, it would possibly be just too didactic and too kind of like preachy. But in this particular case, maybe because how Loach filmed it, it actually seemed very much alive and, you know, like germane to the actual film itself, you know, really interesting. But that's what I remember from Land of Freedom.
Right. Thanks, Darren. I mean, it sometimes occurred to me, I'll go to Steve in a minute, it's occurred to me in the past that I wonder what kinds of films would get made in socialism about the setting up of socialism, you know, the whole kind of revolutionary process. I bet there would be films about it and that they would be set in sort of, you know, as adventures. And I don't think they'd be didactic or involve people sitting around for hours having debates. I think that there would be adventure films and they would be quite, you know, thrilling. And all the sort of... you know, the kind of themes that get us all kind of emotionally engaged in films now would all be present then. And I think some amazing films would be made after the event. It's just that no one's going to make them before the event. Anyway, Steve, next.
Yeah, I think the idea of socialism. That does sound tedious. Just quickly, I think I don't know anybody else thinks about this, but I was told sometime after I'd seen Easy Rider that Peter Fonda had been extremely influenced by revolutionary ideas, and that it showed various, you know, does it start off in a commune or something like that, representing sort of primitive communism? And the way it was put to me is that it's supposedly this history of the development of society. I don't know what anybody else thinks about that, whether somebody was pulling my bloody leg, because I can't remember it in that much detail. But again, that was a film with Jack Nicholson in it, Freddie. And he was brilliant in it. And one thing that I've never seen is Modern Times, and I wonder if that's something that we could say. At least we're talking about alienation in that context. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, I mentioned Modern Times before. Yeah, the sort of the worker against the machine type of thing. Yeah, no. You could even talk about Metropolis actually in that sense. That's workers against the machine in another way. It's a famous film.
Actually, now you said the worker. What about Charlie Drake?
Oh dear.
Quite.
Okay, I'm a bit confused about who's next. Mike Foster.
You mentioned Metropolis. Just quickly, that's a very anti-working class film. It advocates workers just being obedient sheep. Great film visually, but very reactionary. Good shout outs to Land and Freedom from Dougie and Darren. Yeah, that's probably my favourite Loach film, and you know, for the reasons that they've mentioned, and especially the scene Darren mentions about the debate about collectivisation, and I briefly mentioned Peter Watkins's Punishment Park earlier, and that's got some improvised scenes from non-professional actors who are sort of civil rights late 60s characters, and there's debates. Well, I say debates. It's an interrogation. The scene is so they're giving their views against a sort of judge and jury. You've got the sort of the passion and the anger that comes through their sort of improvised performances. So that's another example where sort of political ideas have been turned into drama without losing their bite. Just quickly, I was trying to think of a Mike Lee film to recommend and I haven't seen any of his for quite a while, and my memory is a bit hazy. One which I think is worth watching is High Hopes from, I think, 1988. And you've got a family, their neighbours who represent different sort of social categories. So you've got a very sort of snooty sort of yuppie characters, and you've got others who are sort of jaded lefties. And I think it says some interesting things about left-wingers becoming disillusioned. I remember picking that up in the film. It's a comedy. It's not deadly serious, and it's worth watching. It's got, it's got all the usual Mike Lee tropes, angsty characters, and his usual repertoire of actors. But yeah, that's the Mike Lee film that springs to mind to recommend. Again, not perfect, certainly not socialist, but worth watching for some of the ideas and the a voice through the characters. Cheers.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, I think Darren's put a queue in the queue.
So I apologise for talking too much. I just really recommend what I think is a really good political film. It's an old film, Long Good Friday, London gangster movie. I think it was made in like 1980. And on one level, it's just a very good sort of entertaining thriller. It actually, if you watch it back, or maybe you're already aware of this, it basically anticipates Thatcherism for Thatcher. And I say 1980 was released, or 79-80, but obviously the guy who wrote it, Barry Keith, wrote it a couple of years before. But it's all about, a gangster going legitimate, wants to go legitimate, and he's basically developing the Docklands. And this is brilliant scene, brilliant film, brilliant scenes. Bob Hoskins has these amazing speeches where he did just like, and he basically anticipated the 80s, what we were old enough to remember the 80s, this sort of triumphalism of I'm all right, Jack, fuck the rest of you. He was that character. He was a gangster gone legitimate. I mean, he, don't spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but doesn't turn out that way. But, Long Good Friday, brilliant political film. It was an intentional political film because Barry Keith was a radical left-wing playwright and scriptwriter. And honestly, if you get a chance to watch it as soon as possible, go for it.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. I just suppose if we're talking about gangster films, you can hardly leave The Godfather out of it because of its portrayal of the corruption of politicians. They've just got politicians in their pocket the entire time. Dougie, again.
One film I found quite funny was The Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know if that's been mentioned or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Super Rich or whatever. I'm trying to think of another film. Yeah, that's gone out of my head, right? But The Wolf of Wall Street's worth watching for a critique of the system, right?
Yeah, it is. It's quite instructive, isn't it, Wolf of Wall Street, on just how traders operate and the complete and utter cynicism that these people have about making money and, their effects on, sort of people in the real world. They completely disregard them. Joy, next.
Hi. Does anybody remember a film, I think it was made in the 1950s with Alec Guinness, called The Man in the White Suit? He's a young chemist and he invents a fabric which is indestructible. And basically it all goes well to start with. And suddenly the bosses realise that if you have a fabric which is indestructible, nobody will ever have to buy anything again. So they have to get rid of him. So it's a really good film. I don't know if anybody's seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's a good film. Yeah, it's a piss take on built-in obsolescence, really. Yeah.